So in today's market, sometimes there's some assets that the rents are negative, meaning their concessions, the rents are going down in order to be better competitors in the market. And some of them have pretty moderate rent increases between 0 to maybe 3, maybe 4%. Of course, they're outliers. We have an asset in our portfolio that just last month we renovated a unit and we increased rent by over 20%. So these things happen, but this is not the vast majority of the cases in multifamily right now.
Let's get ready to scale.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of our special series, Multifamily Syndication in 2024, Navigating a Shifting Market. I created this solo episode series because there's a lot of confusion and worry, and a lot of investors out there going through a downturn for the first time. And I wanted to talk about what is happening right now. Obviously, the upmarket that we have been experiencing in the past several months has shifted, and this season is going to address the most pressing concerns about multifamily syndication, what investors have in mind right now on what to do with their investments, how to react to capital calls, how to invest now when things are shifting, things are changing. We're going to talk about all these things, and I'm going to share my experience and what we're doing behind the scenes as sponsors of multifamily assets. For those of you who don't know me, Ellie Perlman, I'm the owner and CEO of Blue Lake Capital. We are multifamily syndicators. So we manage about $500 million in AUM, and we've bought and sold in various markets. And we work with high net worth individuals, with family offices, with funds. And together we buy assets, usually between 200 to 500 units across the US. So this episode is going to be about the multifamily downturn, what investors need to know. And I call it a downturn because obviously the golden age of multifamily of the past, I would say 7, 8, 9 years, is not exactly here. We don't see a lot of fire sales. We're not experiencing the same pressure and distress as office, but there has been a shift, and I'm going to talk about what that means exactly. So let's dive straight into it. First of all, the way that we see it as operators is in the past decade, there were a lot of so first and foremost, I want to talk a little bit about the market and what performance metrics we see right now. On the national level, there has been a shift, as I've mentioned, when it comes to vacancies or occupancy and to rents. So what we've seen in 3, 4, 5 years ago, and even beyond that, we've seen a tremendous mid to high double digit rent increases. We have assets that we were able to push rents up to 59%, percent. And we had assets that only, quote unquote, enjoyed 3 to 10%, saw 3 to 10% rent increases. These days are usually we don't see those numbers today. So in today's market, sometimes there's some assets that the rents are negative, meaning their concessions, the rents are going down in order to be better competitors in the market. And some of them have pretty moderate rent increases between 0 to maybe 3, maybe 4%. Of course, they're outliers. We have an asset in our portfolio that just last month we renovated a unit and we increased rent by over 20%. So these things happen, but this is not the vast majority of the cases in multifamily right now. And so when we underwrite, we use Axiometrics, which is an AI-backed technology where essentially we can see and assess what is happening in the market. So essentially, when we look at the year-over-year rent growth in February, as of February of this year, it's about 0.2%, meaning that around across the U.S., it's pretty much rent is pretty much steady, which is on one hand, these are not great news because you want to see a significant increase. But on the flip side, we don't see a decline across the board across all markets in the U.S. Now, the interesting thing is that when we were looking at the data, we saw that the Midwest is showing some interesting there's some interesting things happening there because the Midwest right now you can find several sub-markets where rent growth is pretty significant, 15 all the way to 28, 29%. And that's pretty significant. And so we're paying more attention to what's happening in some markets in the Midwest. And that could be a result of the increase in cost of living that pushes people to the suburbs, away from cities, away from expensive states into the Midwest, which are much more affordable. Now, vacancy is actually pretty, sorry, occupancy is pretty solid at 94% in the US for across multifamily. And that's a very, very strong indicator that the demand for multifamily is still there. The year-over-year change in occupancy is almost flat, a negative half a percent, so 0.5%, which means that there's a slight shift, but it's not a meaningful shift like what we have seen in office, for instance. And so that's pretty encouraging because it shows that the demand and the attractiveness of multifamily is still very, very strong, and rent growth is still, even if it's slightly, it's still positive. It's not as much as we want to see, but we see that the demand drivers are still there, and the demand for multifamily is still there. And again, when we dove into the numbers, we saw that the Midwest, some markets in the Midwest are actually very, very high on occupancy. Some of them are 95 and 99% and above. And so it's very interesting. It might mean that the Midwest is going to be the next Sun Belt, because right now the Sun Belt region is a very attractive part of the U.S. For multifamily investments, because this is where most tenants are moving into. So we're talking about the Smiling States, especially North and South Carolina, Florida, Texas, Georgia, Arizona. So there's multiple states around the Sun Belt region. And it could be that what we see now is a shift towards the Midwest. Now, I'm a firm believer that we should be very, very careful when we interpret it, the data, and we need also to be extremely patient, because it doesn't mean that the Midwest is the next thing, but it could be that Midwest is gaining momentum that will be translated into higher rents, higher occupancy, because these markets are attracting more and more people. So we're just paying attention to those trends. On a regional, so that's a national level. On a regional level, there's really a lot of variations across the board. Sun Belt, regions, they're still pretty stable, but you do have some getaway cities, that are, it could be, well, Florida is the one, is another area where I still see the demand there, but the increase in insurance costs is pretty much killing a lot of the deals, and so we're not very excited about Florida right now, and that can change. But some specific submarkets within the Sun Belt region are experiencing some sharp rent declines, and so it really depends on the submarket, the state, and the submarket within each state. So we can't have a blanket statement and say, well, Texas is great, it's on fire, Well, Texas has many sub-markets, and Corpus Christi, for instance, is very much out there and pretty remote from DFW. But DFW, has some issues with high competition, and other aspects that make it a little bit less desirable, even though we do love DFW. So it really depends on the submarket. It really depends on the circumstances. But as a whole, what we see in multifamily is a pretty high occupancy across the board with most markets, but we do see some declining in rent growth. So for the most part, rents are still growing, but they're not growing as much as we used to see 3 and 4 years ago. So this is just kind of, I want to lay out the grounds for a more detailed discussion just to, about multifamily, but I wanted to explain what we see now and how different it is than 2020, 2021, and prior to that. The next thing I want to talk about is what exactly is happening with the economy as a whole. Now, I'm not an investment advisor, and of course, this is just my opinion. And everyone should do their due diligence and consult their investment advisors and CPAs before they make any investment decisions. So I don't want you to take, my word and make investment decisions based on that. But when you're reading and doing your homework before deciding, whether you want to keep investing or sit on the sidelines, you'll see that the opinions are pretty much varied across the board. So there's some experts that believe that this is as bad as it gets, and essentially the economy is going to shift slightly, and be, so the downturn severity is not going to be impactful. That rents are pretty much stabilized. Maybe they're going to decline slightly, but nothing meaningful. And other experts have, expressed more concern about a deeper downturn, and that would essentially be caused by a broader economic slowdown, that will get, worse over time. Now, nobody has a crystal ball. You can never know what's going to happen. And you always understand if that was the worst or if you're at the peak or at the bottom when you look back. And it's always 2020. So there's really no real way to time the market. I can share a story. It was back in 2021, I believe, or 2022. We bought an asset a few years. Probably was 2020, a few years ago, and I thought that after a year and a half it was time to sell. And the broker, I'm not going to disclose his name, I like him on a personal and professional level, called me and said, "Ellie, don't sell." I asked him why. They said, "It's not the right time. The market will peak. You can make a lot more. This is not the right time. Nothing is going to change if you wait for next year." And I decided not to wait, and I decided to exit. And investors made over 44, 45% IRR net. It was a big, it was a big success, and kind of a home, one of our home runs. And then the market shifted really quickly after we exited, and there was no way that if I'd waited for the next year, there was no way we could have exited at the same price. Now, I didn't really know that we were at a good at the peak. You can only know that when you're looking back. Looking back, it was the absolute right decision to make. But I applied some of my gut feeling and intuition, and I said, "Listen, right now, interest rates are all-time low. There's a lot of capital chasing deals. This is a good time. I'd rather take 45% IRR rather than wait for 60% IRR that may or may not be there." And that's my investment philosophy. And so when I met the broker a few years later, I said, "How did you know? How did you know it was the right time to sell?" I didn't. It was intuition with a desire to make an impactful and significant exit without risking it for a bigger one. So it's similar to when we look at the downturn environment right now. Some experts think that this is as bad as it gets, and this is the bottom. And some of them say that the bottom has yet to be felt, and we're still going there. And so you don't really know where in the cycle you are. You know this the cycle has shifted, but knowing buying right now, knowing that the cycle has shifted, is actually better because you know how to be more conservative. And we're going to talk about it later, but you know not to expect 10, 20, or even 5% rent growth year over year, because investors now are much smarter and they know that rents are softening. So when they think about investment, they can look at that factor. When it comes to experts' opinion in terms of the market, duration, again, there's no one opinion out there. Some experts think that it's a short-term blip, that we're experiencing some pain, and towards Q3, Q4 of this year, 2024, we're actually going to get out of the cycle. The cycle is going to shift again once the Feds are going to start cutting rates. And of course, everyone expected them to cut rates 6 times, this year. Now it seems like it's going to be 2 to 3. Based on those predictions, many experts believe that it's going to be a short-term blip. Now, other experts essentially expect some sustained period of slower growth for the next 2, maybe 3 years. Now, why am I telling you all of this? Why am I confusing you with saying something that this is as bad as it gets and we're about to turn a corner, and something that there's more pain to for us to feel, and it's going to take much longer? It's because I believe that as an investor, you've got to take into account those two scenarios and understand what do you feel comfortable with, and make sure that if indeed this is not the bottom, it's going to get deeper, and it's gonna essentially be here for much longer, that you are comfortable with making new investments and also with managing the current investments that you have, because really nobody knows. I'm going to be here, and we're going to post these episodes week over week, and I'm going to share what we see. I'm going to share any changes that we see to rents, to pricings, to cap rates, and that may give you some indications of how and whether the market is shifting. And again, we can only know that in hindsight.
Ready to Scale is brought to you by Blue Lake Capital, where we hunt down the best multifamily investment opportunities that we can find and invite investors to join in with us. We target Class B value-add multifamily properties across the Sun Belt. Our CEO, Ellie Perlman, invests a substantial amount of capital into every deal. This means our interests are aligned with yours. If you're an accredited investor looking to expand your portfolio and diversify sponsors, be sure to visit us at bluelake-capital.com. Blue Lake Capital. Be bold, be extraordinary, and keep moving forward.
Now, next, I want to talk about some impact factors. So what is impacting what's happening with multifamily right now? We talked about the high occupancy level across the board, 94% on average with multifamily assets across the US. We talked about the rent growth that is positive, but very minimal, but at least the average is not declining. Now, there are two to three major factors that will impact the performance of multifamily. One, of course, is interest rates. And this is, you don't have to be, I mean, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room to understand that. When interest rates started to go up, it put pressure on assets, because the debt payments are much higher, and it could be that debt doubled and tripled almost overnight. And also, that meant that the costs of running assets is much higher besides the debt. So paying vendors, paying, payroll, all of that actually it impacted the asset. Now, when interest rates are higher, it means also that whoever is going to buy an asset can now afford to pay much less for the same asset. And so the sponsors and owners that had to exit in the last 12, maybe 18 months found themselves in a tough position because their loan is due. Maybe they took a 5-year loan or 10-year loan and it's due. And now, usually it's interest only payment and it's amortized over 30, 35 years, but it ballooned after 5, 7, 10 years. And now they have no other choice but to exit. But if they do, because interest rates are higher and LTVs, loan to values, are lower, so they cannot, the new buyers cannot borrow at 70 or 75%. It's now all the way down to 50%. And interest rates are not 3% like we used to see. It's now 5.5% and 6.5%. That means that there are millions and tens of millions of dollars less that they are willing or able to pay for assets. So it impacted assets from the cash flow perspective, but also from an exit perspective. When it comes to inflation, this is also impacting multifamily because when there's inflation, it means that the people that you bring to manage the asset that are sitting in the asset and managing work orders, maintenance, leasing, they require higher salaries. That the vendors are charging more. That the capital expenditure, the entire it could be HVACs, new HVACs that you order to replace in, on some units. Because of inflation, everything goes up and that puts pressure on cash flow. And of course, there's some fear of potential, a deeper potential recession that if it happens, there's going to be some job loss. And that can put pressure on assets because if tenants are losing their job, they're unable to pay some or all of their rents. Now, I don't want to portray an overly dark picture because I always say that in every cycle there are good deals and bad deals, and it's much easier to understand if you're looking at a good deal when things are not great because you're just going to assume that things are not going to get that much better throughout the entire whole period, and it's helpful as an investor to see it through those eyes rather than through pink glasses. So, what can you do when you're looking at a deal? First and foremost, do whatever due diligence you can on the sponsor. Make sure that you feel comfortable with the sponsor, that you like them, that you think that they can actually handle a downturn. The second part is stress testing every investment. So if you're looking at an asset, if it's not in the material, you can actually ask for some clarifications. The two things I would put it, more attention to, there's two to three things that can make or break a deal. One is ask what are the rent increases? What are the premiums that you are modeling? So if a deal looks great at 12, 15, 14% IRR, but in order to get there, the sponsor assumed 10, 15, even 9, 8% rent increases. That could be, and there are outliers and there are exceptions, but for the most part, that's too aggressive because the sponsor may not be able to get those rent increases. One thing that we do differently, for instance, is we're looking at the premiums that the current owner gets. So let's say they've renovated 25% or 50% of the asset, and they're getting $200 rent premiums. Even though we think we can get to 230 or 250, just to be conservative, we're gonna go back to the $200 because it's proving that the property can consistently generate those premiums, and we're gonna stick to what is proven. And we're going to try and achieve the 250, but we're going to underwrite the 200. And so you can look at it and say 200 is a lot, but if you don't ask the questions and if you don't dive into the details, you might not know that the property is already generating those premiums. And assuming that we're going to keep that, that could be a good way to stress test an asset. The other side is looking at cap rates and looking, of course, at the debt. So we are right now doing only fixed rate debt. And if any sponsor is putting a bridge loan on the asset, I would ask to see the adjusted returns if the rate cap is in place from the very first day. So rate cap is essentially, it's like buying an insurance that interest rate payments are not, that the loan payments are not going to go above a certain amount. Let's say the loan is $150,000 a month, and it can go all the way to 600, 700,000, depending on the interest rate. But when the sponsor buys a rate cap, then it cannot go above 300,000, for instance. The only way to look at those type of deals today is if you see what the returns are, assuming that a day after the deal is closed, interest rate goes up and we are at $300,000 from day one. That's one way of mitigating risk. So that would be the second thing. And of course, I mentioned the exit cap. You want to understand what the story is behind the assumptions of the exit cap to make sure that it does make sense. And normally, when you buy an asset at a certain cap rate, you want to make sure that the exit cap is higher. Of course, there's a lot of exceptions to it because sometimes you buy a deal at a certain discount and the ingoing cap rate, the cap rate you have when you buy the asset, is not the market cap rate. So, you just need to take everything into consideration. But stress testing and doing due diligence on assets before you invest now, that is extremely important in it, at any point in any cycle. But now, what the things that I would put attention to is mainly the rent increases and the premiums, and understand the assumptions and the thinking behind those numbers, and also understanding the debt structure. And what's behind those assumptions. So, all in all, having said that, I still do believe in multifamily. The numbers don't lie. There's still a very, very strong demand. And the fact that we're experiencing pressure in the market right now is actually an excellent opportunity if you are still comfortable investing in today's market, of knowing what to stress test and what to pay attention to when you're looking at a new deal. And so I hope that brought some value to at least some of you. If you want to talk with us about investing, you can go to bluelake-capital.com. We have an investor form online that you can fill up the form, leave your information there, and me or one of my team members are going to get back to you. And we'll be happy to chat. So if you enjoyed this podcast and this episode, you can go to iTunes or anywhere you listen to the podcast, leave us a review, give us some rate us. That's very important to us. We put a lot of time and effort and energy into creating this content to make sure that investors are informed and to bring value to the listeners. So we appreciate it very much. Thank you guys for listening. I'll be here next week to talk about addressing investors' fears head on. That's the name of the next episode. So we're going to talk about that. So I'll see you in a week. And then a few days later, we're going to upload another episode with Jeanette Robinson, our Director of Investor Relations. And until then, be great, keep pushing forward, and I'll see you on the next episode.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.